and observed it dimpling the light swell that was coming in, I cast a stone over it. So orderly, so quiet, so regular, the rising and falling of the tug steamer, the lighter and the boat, the turning of the windlass, the coming in of the tide, that I myself seemed, to my own thinking, anything but new to the spot. Yet I had never seen it in my life, a minute before, and had traversed 200 miles to get at it. That very morning I had come bowling down, and struggling up hill country roads, looking back at snowy summits, meeting courteous peasants well-to-do, driving fat pigs and cattle to market, noting the neat and thrifty dwellings, with their unusual quantity of clean white linen drying on the bushes, having windy weather suggested by every cotter's little rick, with its thatch straw-ridged and extra straw-ridged into overlapping compartments, like the back of a rhinoceros. Had I not given a lift of 14 miles to the coast guardsman, kit and all, who was coming to his spell of duty there, and had we not just now parted company? So it was, but the journey seemed to glide down into the placid sea, with other chafened trouble, and for the moment nothing was so calmly and monotonously real under the sunlight as the gentle rising and falling of the water with its freight, the regular turning of the windlass aboard the lighter, and the slight obstruction so very near my feet. O reader, haply turning this page by the fireside at home, and hearing the night wind rumble in the chimney, that slight obstruction was the uppermost fragment of the wreck of the Royal Charter, Australian trader and passenger ship, homeward bound, that struck here on the terrible morning of the 26th of this October, broke into 3 parts, went down with her treasure of at least 500 human lives, and has never stirred since. From which point, or from which, she drove ashore stern foremost, on which side, or on which, she passed the little island in the bay, for ages henceforth to be aground certain yards outside her. These are rendered bootless questions by the darkness of that night and the darkness of death. Here she went down. Even as I stood on the beach with the words, "Here she went down," in my ears, a diver, in his grotesque dress, dipped heavily over the side of the boat alongside the lighter and dropped to the bottom. On the shore by the water's edge was a rough tent made of fragments of wreck where other divers and workmen sheltered themselves, and where they had kept Christmas Day with rum and roast beef to the destruction of their frail chimney. Cast up among the stones and boulders of the beach were great spars of the lost vessel, and masses of iron twisted by the fury of the sea into the strangest forms. The timber was already bleached, and iron rusted, and even these objects did no violence to the prevailing air the whole scene wore, of having been exactly the same for years and years. Yet only 2 short months had gone since a man, living on the nearest hilltop overlooking the sea, being blown out of bed at about daybreak by the wind that had begun to strip his roof off, and getting upon a ladder with his nearest neighbour to construct some temporary device for keeping his house over his head, saw, from the ladder's elevation, as he looked down by chance towards the shore, some dark, troubled object close in with the land. And he and the other, descending to the beach, and finding the sea mercilessly beating over a great broken ship, had clambered up the stony ways, like staircases without stairs, on which the wild village hangs in little clusters, as fruit hangs on boughs, and had given the alarm. And so, over the hill slopes and past the waterfall, and down the gullies where the land drains off into the ocean, the scattered quarrymen and fishermen inhabiting that part of Wales had come running to the dismal sight, their clergyman among them. And as they stood in the leaden morning, stricken with pity, leaning hard against the wind, their breath and vision often failing,